You've been hiding in the shadows way too long. You always thought that you were weak, but babe, you're wrong. Yeah, you better step into the light, just give it a try. Think that it's time you let that spark out. You've been hiding in the shadows way too long.
Hey, welcome to the Coming Out Late podcast. I'm Robin, your host, and I'm a late bloomer just like you. We are a part of a rapidly growing, lesser known or even talked about subset of the queer community. We're a tribe, if you will. And if you're anything like me, when I came out, I was confused, scared. I felt like I was going crazy and I felt all alone and had nobody to talk to. Not to worry, you've come to the right place. In the Coming Out Late podcast, you'll hear real, raw, and relatable Coming Out Late stories. You'll be inspired, informed, and educated, and you'll definitely feel supported. And you can stop feeling like you're living someone else's life and start living your own. So welcome. You have found your tribe. And welcome to the Coming Out Late podcast. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Coming Out Late podcast. I am Robin, your host. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in and for sharing a part of your busy day with me today. I really do appreciate you listening. Before I get into what this week's episode is all about, I do want to remind you to not only please listen all the way through to the end, where I will share information about our 2024 Coming Out Late retreat schedule, but also to ask you, if you have not done so already, to please rate and leave a review for my Coming Out Late podcast. It makes such a big difference in the growth of the podcast and the opportunities that we can draw in. So in addition to leaving a review and a rating, please also subscribe to the Coming Out Late podcast too. Like maybe at your earliest convenience? I do really appreciate that. Okay, so in this week's episode, I am sharing with you a recorded interview I did, gosh, darn near a year ago with the Whitney Miller, our resident guru on all things regarding sex and pleasure, as well as relational communication. And for those of you who may not know who Whitney is, she is a highly regarded sex educator and pleasure coach. Whitney believes pleasure is not one size fits all and sees pleasure as a subjective experience that can only really be defined by the individual, like people like you and I. Her main goal in working with clients is to help them find their way back home to themselves. What a beautiful gift and goal that is. And when I recorded this episode way back when, I also invited anyone from our private Facebook group, Coming Out Late, to come in and listen to the interview and ask questions of Whitney using the Zoom chat function. So we not only hear all about what Whitney does for queer women like us in our community, but we also hear Whitney answer some questions that were asked of her through the chat from newly out women like us in our community. It's a great two-part episode, and I'll be doing more of these kinds of conversations with Whitney in the future. After all, sex and pleasure is a pretty big part of our new experiences on this new journey that we're all on. Some of the topics that Whitney and I talk about are things like how detrimental it is to all aspects of our health when we ignore and suppress the physical and emotional signs of our queerness. We also talk about how important it is for us to prioritize feeling good, because in order to give in relationships, we also must be able to receive. And of course, the importance of really understanding the difference between performative sex versus pleasure sex. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this part one of my two-part conversation with Whitney Miller on sex and pleasure. Enjoy. So I am like beyond excited because we are with the Whitney Miller today, very special guest who specializes in queer sex and relational communication, sex education, and is a pleasure coach. Welcome, Whitney. I am just so thrilled to have you here today.
Thank you, Robin. I appreciate being here.
Yeah. So for people who, I mean, if there's anybody on the planet who doesn't know who you are, would you please give us a little background about who you are on a personal level? Because we'll definitely dive into your professional side. But who is Whitney? How old are you? Where'd you grow up? Do you have siblings, parents?
So I'm 37 years old. I'm a mom. I have a beautiful 10-year-old son. I'm originally from East Tennessee. That's where I've lived my entire life. I have a lot of stamps in my passport, but I've lived in my hometown my whole life. Be moving to Asheville, North Carolina really soon, which is great. I've wanted to live there since I was 15, but because I'm engaged to my partner, Janelle, we're merging our lives together. So I'll be moving. I'm excited about that. My background is I've been a yoga facilitator for about 6 years now. So mindfulness practices are very important to me. I'm a very spiritual person, but I don't really talk about it unless I'm asked. And yeah, like I know I have two stepbrothers. My parents, they live in Dandridge. I used to live just right next door to them. So moving me and my son is it's a big deal because we're moving away from the family, and I've always lived close to all my family. So
Wow, that is a big deal. That's really tough. Congratulations on your engagement.
thank
So
you.
tell us a little bit about that. How did you and Janelle meet, and who proposed to whom, and all that good stuff?
So we met the old-fashioned way on Bumble, you know, how the queers do. We have to use the dating apps. So I saw her. I was at a point in my life where I've had enough heartache that I'm really sharp about what I want and what I don't want. And she happened to be in the exact same place. So we were just like, let's have fun. Let's have fun together. And it was just, it was fun until it was just like the best time of my life. So, and I was just like, wow, I was not looking for any of this. We were both polyamorous when we met each other. And as it kept going, we were like, hey, do you want to like practice intentional monogamy? I'm just feeling polysaturated in this one relationship. I don't feel like I have the emotional space for another partner. Like, how do you feel about that? And she was like, we were just like, wow, I just feel really intensely. And if that shifts, we'll just have that conversation. But right now, very focused on each other. So we went to Costa Rica for a yoga retreat, and we did that in February. And I bought the engagement ring in November. So I've been just sitting, and I'm terrible at keeping secrets. I'm terrible at it. But I wanted so bad to make this really special for her. So we went to the yoga retreat, and I got a sinus infection and couldn't do the proposal in the place that I wanted to. We needed to go on this really strenuous hike, and I'm just like taking decongestant, and I'm in paradise, but my nose is like in the winter. Whatever. The very next day, I was like, hey, do you want to take pictures? So we kind of went in the jungle a little bit, and these beautiful trees that have these very unique roots that come up out of the ground. And I sat her on top of it. And the video is on my TikTok under the playlist Babe, if you want to see it. So a whole
Oh my
proposal there.
gosh.
And you can see her, you can't hear what we're saying. I kept that intimate and special to us, but it's very beautiful. You can see her face and the look of shock because she has no idea what's happening. And
That is so cool. So you kept it a secret.
I did. I was able to keep it a secret, and it was perfectly beautiful. And then she proposed back to me. That's the cool thing about, you know, fuck gender roles is that you can just make it up as you go. So she proposed back to me a couple of months later, and she had like bought a unique band and just kind of like kept it a secret because she had pulled it out of her bedside table and I didn't even know it was there. And it was just a really special, intimate moment.
Oh, that is so great. I'm so happy for you. That is so
Thank you.
special. And I had no idea you were in the poly world. That's that boy, that's like a whole nother episode, I think. And I just love the way you described that you were feeling polysaturated. Like you have such a way with words. Polysaturated. What does that even mean?
So when couples who are practicing polyamory, when they feel like they're at their capacity for partners, they'll say that they're polysaturated. Like I don't have the emotional space or, you know, physical time to add in another partner. They'll say polysaturated. So my partner was the first one who had said it like that. She was like, yeah, you know, I just feel all filled up with just you and I for now.
Wow. I don't know. I mean, I'm never going to say never because I didn't even know I was freaking queer until 8 years ago. So I am never saying never. And I don't know that I have the bandwidth for poly relationships, you know, I don't know. I barely have enough bandwidth for myself. But like I said, I'm never saying never because I don't know. So, wow. So now you're monogamous. That is so cool. And yeah, that is just amazing. What else did I want to ask you about your personal? I just drew a blank. All right. So, well, Janelle, is she a late bloomer or is she?
So Janelle's a bisexual.
Okay.
Yeah. So she had dated both men and women. We started dating. She was dating both. Yeah.
All right. So yeah. So she's like an all around bloomer. And how about you? Have you been out your whole life or?
I've been out since I was 15. So at 15, I came out as a lesbian and I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that I'm gay. My older brother is gay, so it wasn't like a big deal in my family, but I live in the South, so it was a big deal at school. So the places where I experienced violence and threats and things like that, where it got scary, was out in the world, but home was a safe place.
Oh, thank goodness. Imagine if both places were not safe.
Right. So underneath that, at 18 years old, I started trying to get myself into heterosexual relationships. I was like, that just seems easier. And it seems like less of a threat. Like if I'm holding my partner's hand, I don't have to worry about somebody throwing a brick at the back of my head. And it's just,
oh my God,
just things like that get on your mind all the time. So I was like, I'll try really hard to be bisexual. And it spiraled me into depression. It was just,
Wow. I think for a lot of late bloomers, it spiraled us into depression too. It just took a lot longer.
Yeah. Delay your self-actualization, man, you just really start to feel it.
Yeah, exactly. And when we have support groups or in other conversations I have with late bloomers, people coming out late in life, we talk about the idea that once you can't unknow it, and once you let that genie out of the bottle, you can't put it back in the bottle. And trying to live with that information is really detrimental to our mental health and physical health as well. People have actually talked about having some serious physical issues as well as emotional issues. And once they came out and started living their true life, a lot, if not all, of those symptoms went away, which is wild.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I had a yeast infection for 2 years.
Wow.
The doctors were like, we don't know what's going on with you. I'm like, I am miserable.
Wow.
Like, miserable. My vagina was like through with me. She was just like, I'm not having anything to do with you if you don't wake the fuck up.
Wow. How sad is that too? And I've heard that. I've heard this from other women that have come out like early in life, that they try to live in the hetero world. They try to date men. How sad is that to realize maybe life would be easier on me and safer if I just throw myself into what is unfortunately socially acceptable. And I think it's changing over time, but it's taking a long time. And yeah, I know for me, like when I see military, I thank them for their service. When I see lifelong lesbians, I thank them for paving the way for me because it could not have been easy. It's not easy coming out late by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a different difficulty and I think difficult challenges. But wow. So
it's so wild because I came out when I was 15 and I was one of the first queers to come out in my high school because it's country bumpkin place. It's called Dandridge, Tennessee. It's like the second oldest town in Tennessee.
Wow.
We have our first red light when I was like a teenager. It's just a small town. So I think there were 18 Black people in my graduating class of 600 people.
Oh.
And I came out and then the faculty attacked me. I remember sitting in the principal's office and he told me it was my fault that my visibility was causing other people to come out of the closet.
Oh my God.
Yes. He was like, you started this. That's what he said. You started this shit, you know. And like he would call my parents thinking that he was going to get them on his side because we're country people. And my dad is livid. He just come in, scoop me up and take me out of there. Like he just, I can't believe you're calling my daughter in here. I come through this cafeteria. I see three kids sucking face before I can even get to you. And you've got my daughter in here because of why? Because I came out of the bathroom at the same time as another girl. I didn't even know that girl, but they would grab me and be like, you did something in there. I know you did. And I was like, I was two stalls down from her. I don't even know who she is. You were situating your pants when you came out. What do you do after you pee? You leave them around your ankles?
Oh my God.
But this is the faculty. It's not even my peers. These are adults. And I was treated terribly.
Oh, that's sad. I am so sorry. It's just so fear-based too. So ignorant and fear-based. It's unbelievable. Wow. Thank goodness you have the support of your family. Thank goodness. And I don't know if this is something that I've just heard or if there's truth behind it, but is it harder to come out in like with anybody, any people of color? Is it hard? Is it culturally different? Like, I know I've heard that it can be really a lot less accepted in African-American families. And
it depends. I didn't have a whole lot of contact with the African-American side of my family because I'm mixed race. So I was raised by my Caucasian family, and my grandmother is Southern Baptist. So it just wasn't something I talked to her about very often. It's like she was like, love the sinner and not the sin kind of situation. And I grew up in church. I had a lot of Southern Baptist influence. So part of me like trying to be a bisexual is like that. My grandma in my ear was like, you're going to go to hell for this.
Oh, so boy.
You have to shed up that purity culture to be yourself. There's just so many things against you to just self-actualize.
They are. It's really crazy. It's crazy that we put our own people, our own humankind through that when life can be difficult enough just living life.
The purpose of life is just to pursue happiness and to find some comfort and to enjoy, and people make it so hard. I'm like, literally all of this is coming from your imagination and you choose to make it so hateful and hard.
Yes, that's really where I come from as well, that we make it way harder than it has to be. And it's just about being a beacon of love, being open and honest, and just having an adventure on this short time that we are on this earth and in these bodies. It's just, let's talk about pleasure and adventure since we are here with the pleasure coach, sex education and pleasure. Let's talk about your services that you offer at now that I know what BDE is, I'm never going to be the same. Let's talk about your services. You offer one-on-one coaching, you offer workshops, and you have a very extensive video library. What kinds of things do you do in your one-on-one coaching? Why do people come to you for one-on-one coaching?
Yes. So with the one-on-one coaching, it's pleasure coaching. And the thing about pleasure is only the person in the body perceiving the sensation can say whether it feels good or not. So a lot of people who are sitting in front of me have forgotten how to choose themselves. They don't know how to prioritize feeling good. It feels like they're doing something wrong. So I'm there to help them with like resources and my knowledge, and to help them with like relational communication, like sifting through green flags and red flags, if they want to have relationships, or the relationships with themselves, which is the most important, because if you don't have that, you can't receive. You can give, and you usually give beyond you overextend yourself, and therefore you burn out. So you can't be present for the relationship. So finding their way back home to themselves. That's my intention in working with people.
That's huge. That is huge. On some, like not even just for the pleasure side of things, but just to enjoy life, to find yourself way back home after all that conditioning of being, having to make life hard, having to swim upstream, you know, no pain, no gain is bullshit. That's crazy that, you know, they feel like they're doing something wrong.
I'm taught guilty pleasure our whole life. And it's just pleasure. There's nothing guilty about it.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, that is crazy. And do you ever get couples that come to you for coaching?
Yes. When I'm like working with couples, it's usually like mediation. That's how I see myself. Ooh. I'm just here to be like, this is what this person is saying to you. Do you hear that? Do you hear where they're coming from? Or asking questions to get them thinking about what they want to say. But mainly, if there's two people there, I'm just trying to get them to talk to each other.
Wow. Yeah. Plus, I'm sure that for some people too, it's difficult. Like these subject matters are sometimes difficult because, again, because of our conditioning and society has told us this is naughty talk. And so, I could see how it would need a mediator for some to just get the words out.
When the wound is loud, you can't hear what your partner's saying. You just hear your wound inside. And I'm there to be this outside party that doesn't have a stake in either one of these people. I'm a neutral person. So I'm just like, that's not what they're saying. They're saying this. And it's like, oh, you know.
Wow. But can it even also just be that beyond a wound that like I am so new to sex? What if you have two women coming out late in life and they're like scared to death of saying the word dildo or anything? Yes. I would think that would need mediation too.
That comes from shame culture. So reaching out for what you want doesn't make you bad. It doesn't make you selfish. We have to speak
That's true.
That programming, it's in all of us.
Oh, it really is. It's deep, unfortunately, and goes back hundreds and hundreds of years.
Absolutely. Yes.
And I really do believe that by us being strong and coming out and living our little gay self lives and being authentic, that we are slowly turning that around, all that shame culture around. Talk to me about your workshops. What do you do in your workshops?
Yeah. So in my workshops, I like to make them as interactive as possible because there's nothing like the visceral reaction. If you feel it in your body, then you know it. If I tell you, you can try to grip on what I'm saying. But if I lead you through a meditation that takes you deep into your body or show you a breath practice that can connect you better with the sensations in your body, then you're in control. Like you can be accountable for the pleasure that you want to seek out. So the most popular workshop I do is the pleasure-based workshop where we identify what performance-based sex looks like. And then I take them through a led meditation to show them what embodying pleasure is supposed to feel like. And then they can incorporate that into their future, like sexual practices. It's not supposed to be me performing outer appearances of pleasure to assuage my partner's ego. It's about me breathing and connecting with them and feeling pleasure deep in my body.
For me, it's a lot about slowing things down and getting out of my head. I'm really trying to live my life outside my head and just in my body. Because my body knows.
You can practice that through mindful eating. Like instead of just scooping food into your mouth, like it's just another task. Look at it. Smell it. Let your mouth water with anticipation before you take the bite. Let your body feel the yearning for it.
That's very sexual.
it's sensuality. It's all around you. It's the way you live your life is also the way you fuck. So
yeah,
they're not all connected.
Wow. Wow. So just for people that are listening, I have invited people to join if they wanted to sit in on this live recording with Whitney. And we do have a handful of people. And I've asked them if they want to put questions in the chat to feel free to do that. So we do have a question. Any suggestions for internal work on how to reduce inner shame? What can I do to challenge it?
So one of my exercises that I do to challenge shame is you take out a piece of notebook paper and you want to split it down the middle vertically. So you have two columns. And on the column on the left, you want to start to write down your limiting beliefs about sex. Like, for example, if you have trouble receiving, then you would probably write something down like maybe you think that your pleasure isn't worth your partner's efforts. Maybe you haven't seen it like that or you don't had those words for it. Because it's usually just a feeling, like a discomfort that you get when your partner's doing things to you and you don't feel like you're reciprocating like you should. But your enthusiasm for receiving is reciprocating. But a lot of people have like purity culture. So they feel like sex is this dirty, shameful thing that we only share with the partner we love. So those two things don't really go together when you're taught that. Oh, sex is dirty and it's shameful, but you save it for the person you love. And they conflict with each other. So you write these things down, like something your pastor said, something your mom said, something you heard somewhere. And then next to each belief, you write down, where did that belief come from? Did your pastor say it? Did your mom say that? Did you read that somewhere? You look at this list and take the time to notice that none of these limiting beliefs have come from you. And say, how is each one of these serving me?
Wow.
Sit with it. How is it serving you? And why are you carrying it?
Wow. That's good. And why are you carrying it? That's really good. It's funny, we talked about that a little bit in a recent episode about money, to explore your feelings and where did your beliefs about money come from? And do they still serve you? Do those beliefs still serve you? So it's really interesting that you can do that with our sexual shame as well.
Absolutely. So curiosity is always going to take the place of shame, because shame is self-judgment and curiosity is creativity. And you can't be creative if you're judging yourself. So it's just working the polarity.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. Shame serves really no purpose in life.
There's no fruit.
None.
You won't grow anything with shame. Yet so many parents use it to try to put growth into their children.
And or control them.
I understand it's hard, but you have to co-regulate with children. You can't put shame on them to get them to grow.
So true. So true. Great question. And feel free. Here's another one. Do you have recommendations for someone who has been disassociated from their bodies for many years? What are some first steps to take? Great question.
Oh man, if you've got years of disassociation, and like, you don't have to answer this, but this in my sex therapy books, if it's connected to some type of trauma, like if you have some type of trauma that's causing you dissociation, then what has to happen is you have to relearn getting into your body. Like relearning touch is one of the exercises that I think of when it comes to this. And in that, it's this Wendy Maltz. Wendy Maltz wrote a book called Sexual Healing, and she suggests that you make a nest for yourself, like a safe space. If you have a beanbag or you have a favorite place in your house that you like to be that feels safe to you, and then you take with you a basket of things that different senses. Maybe you take a jar of cinnamon to smell. You take an orange with you for texture and for smell, or maybe you have some fabric that's very soothing to you, like velvet or silk or things like that. But different textures, different smells, different colors for sight. This gets you to be in your senses. So if you're in your senses, then you're dropping into your body. And this way you can control how much of it you do. So if it becomes overstimulating, you can just put the items down and take a break, which is really important for you to acknowledge, like when you're white knuckling something, to stop doing that so that your body will trust you. You're building your relationship back with your body, because disassociation is like fight or flight, like fight, flight, fawn, freeze, those situations. So your sympathetic nervous system is in overdrive. We're trying to get you into your parasympathetic nervous system.
Wow.
So calming, regulating. Yeah.
That's a cool exercise, really cool exercise. And I love that, because you're regulating how much your senses are being charged, or that's really cool.
How long they're present in your body if you need to dissociate to feel safe again. Because what is a defense mechanism? So you're just slowly letting yourself know, your mind and your body, that your body's a safe place to be now.
Wow. I hope that helped answer your question. And if anybody wants any further explanations on their questions, please write that in the chat as well. I'd be happy to dive deeper into those. Wow, these are great questions. So you've got the one-on-one coaching, you've got workshops, and you've got
the other workshop. I forgot to, because I do kink workshops as well.
Whoa.
I do pleasure-based, but I do kink, because if people want to get into it, they don't know where to start. It's overwhelming. It's a large umbrella term. So this June, I have a intro to impact play. Like, people who don't understand impact play have no idea how to get started, have no idea that they can just use items around the house, that it's a trust building exercise. It's also like a highway to endorphins. So it can be an arousal building exercise. And I'll do live demonstrations in that workshop.
Wow, that is cool. Very cool. And on that subject, I'm throwing myself to the lions here, but I have to say, all right, so you remember that book, is it 50 Shades of Grey?
Yeah, I hate it.
I know. So many people hate it, but let me just defend myself here for a second.
Go for it.
That opened me up to kink.
Yes. I understand.
That opened me up to, if it did nothing else, it opened up my awareness of and acceptance of it and curiosity. It gave me kink curiosity. So I think that's a good thing.
I think that's a good thing. I think that it's harmful when vanilla folks watch that and try to mimic it out.
I would think so.
Could not do the BDSM community justice as far as aligning with consent. And Christian Grey, the only way he got away with that was because he's a millionaire. If he would have been in a trailer park with a fly swatter, that would have been an SVU episode instead.
Oh my God, I hadn't thought about it that way. But yeah, I would never attempt it, but it just, it allowed me to accept it. It allowed me to say, oh wow, okay, so this can be very arousing. Yeah. That's what it did for me. And to the point where, you know, I would definitely consider getting more educated in the area of kink and at least exploring it and trying it. Whereas before I was like, oh no, like anything else. I was such a phobe about everything. So yeah, but other than that, I don't know what it did for other people, but for me, it opened up a curiosity to kink. Can you give us a brief definition of kink and what it encompasses?
Oh man, like I said before, like kink is a huge umbrella term. Like all kink means is anything that is considered taboo by mainstream society. So something that doesn't seem like it's inherently sexual or going to lead into something sexual, but can, but that's kind of leading because kink can be completely separate from sex. Some people just want the kink part and they don't want the sex part. And I used to be one of those people when I was single. I would go to a BDSM dungeon and I would get topped in impact play. I would be the bottom. So I would be receiving impact. I love the endorphin high. It's like a runner's high. Like you get warmed up. You also get a lot of focused attention from someone. So it's very empowering to your self-esteem to be like focused on that hard and respected, and your boundaries to be respected and your limits are respected. And like for 3 days, each day I would receive a text message from the person who taught me, hey, are you processing the scene okay? Do you need any help? Are you having any bottom drop? Like you have that big endorphin spike. You can have a little depressive phase afterwards if you're not checked on. And if aftercare is not done properly, it makes you feel dirty, shameful, regretful about what you did. So somebody being like, hey, I really had a good time. Are you okay? Alleviates that, gives you a little oxytocin, makes you feel comforted. But for me, it like boosted my self-esteem through the roof. I was like, nobody gets to treat me like shit. Like I'm respected all the time and appreciated. And it was just like, it made me feel really good in my soul, but I didn't have any self connected to it. Yeah.
That's what makes you a BDE, man. Now I know where that comes from. Wow, that is really cool. Anything else about workshops before I ask you about your video library?
I think that's it.
Okay. So tell me, like, what kinds of things are in your video library? What can people expect to see there?
Yes, so on Patreon, I started the Patreon with a mindfulness for late bloomers. I was like, from the late bloomer perspective, from being in Carrie DeWitt's group, late blooming lesbians, I see the questions. I see them in my Facebook group, Truth, which is Pleasure Ed with BDE Moves, but there's a mixed bag of folks in there. It's not like just late bloomers. It's all kinds of women and femme presenting folks are in there. So particularly like the mindset of the late bloomer and what they need, I've went forward with that. So I started all the way back with like vulva anatomy and direct stimulation, how to finger someone, the safety, the questions about my nails, what do I do? And like, I did lots of videos on strap-ons, like the accessories, how to put it on, how to pull the strap, ideas, like all break those little pieces down that I kept seeing those questions for where folks are feeling awkward about trying things. I do oral demonstrations. I have a vulva model. I get real vulnerable on there and I show like how you do your tongue. This is how you do your lips. This is how you like jaw endurance, things like that, that folks worry about positions. My fiance is on there with me to help with the visual learners. So things like sitting on someone's face and nonverbal cues. So if you can't breathe, let's tap somebody on the thigh. Let them know.
Yeah.
There's sex furniture. There's like how to remove shame. So like The mindfulness things are there. Tantric sex practices are there with audio guides. There's podcast episodes with my partner and I having conversations about how do we introduce dirty talk? Here's a 6-page list of things that you could say. Why don't you go over it with your partner? Here's me and my partner going over the entire 6-page list. This is what that conversation sounds like.
Wow. Wow. I actually just recently, and I don't remember which Facebook group it was in because there are lots. I have the Coming Out Late group. Carrie DeWitt has the Late Bloomer group. But somebody asked in there, help me with dirty talk. I need some help with dirty talk. And it was just crickets. One person wrote back and said, sorry, I can't help you. I really suck at it.
Because man, that's really putting yourself out there. Yeah. So I try to give like baby steps to get in. So you're not just jump in the pool. Just do it. It's like, I'll give you a zero entry. Just walk the beach access.
Wow. That's incredible. We got to check that out. And I will put, for everybody listening, I will put Whitney's website address in the show notes. And it's basically BDE with a hyphen moves, MOVES.com. So that's BDE, like, let's see, bottom dildo energy -moves.com. Yeah. And there's like just a ton on her website, just a ton. You really are a wealth of knowledge. And I really appreciate and thank you for being so vulnerable, because how else can you teach this stuff without really getting into it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I just want people to feel comfortable around me, and I want them to see what it looks like to talk about sex without shame, because I worked to get here.
We all worked to get to where we are. Now, something else that's really very obvious when you go to Whitney's website is she talks a lot about performance-based sex versus pleasure-based sex. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, what the differences are? What is performance-based sex and what is pleasure-based sex?
Absolutely. So performance-based sex is when you're performing outer appearances of pleasure, but you're not really there. You're floating above your body, judging the situation, or you're like deep recessed inside of yourself. It can feel like either one of those things, but you're not connected with your body and you're not in a state of what you would call enjoyment, enduring. So lots of us do this. Sometimes it can look like faking an orgasm because you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. But really what you're doing is disempowering them of their ability to process their own emotions. And you're also passing up an opportunity to connect, because you could say, hey, it's just too frustrating for me to come sometimes. I was having a really good time and I don't need an orgasm to feel satisfied. Or I'm just really struggling because it takes me a long time to, and I'm worried that you don't want to take that much time with me. You can talk about these things. We miss out on these opportunities to connect and build deeper relationships by thinking that we're saving someone emotional labor. Let them do it. Let them process. And if they can't process, then why would you want to continue a relationship with someone who's lacking that much emotional maturity?
Yep. So true. Communication is so important, and it's before you have sex, but it can also be during. People forget that. Like, that's really important to have communication during sex, whether it's physical, like just tapping someone on the shoulder or redirecting their hand or their head. Or words.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Like my partner and I, we laugh during, take a little water break. Stop taking it so seriously. It's not a performance. If you feel like there's a script in your head, you're having performance-based sex.
Yeah.
Doing that. Just let it be free and messy and color outside the lines and let it be awkward. And we're just human bodies coming together. Weird shit's going to happen. It's
That is so true. And I think for many women, I think it does take a while to orgasm sometimes. And my first girlfriend, here I am finally out and I'm with my first girlfriend, and she was determined to make sure that I orgasmed. When in the beginning, and I kept telling her I was really okay with it, which really surprised me. I was like, hey, what did I used to call it? Stage fright. I said, listen, my body has stage fright. Don't worry about it.
That arousal down when you make someone feel obligated to perform.
Yes.
You turn them off.
Yeah. And she was just, she had a lot of masculine energy too. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but it was like, hey, I'm okay with it. If I'm not okay with it, I'll let you know. But I really was having a good time, thoroughly was enjoying myself. It's okay. It will happen. I'm new at this.
The orgasm isn't even the best part. We make this 3-second event such a big fucking deal that we ruin the whole journey.
Yeah, I just never forget that. And I was so proud of myself for not beating myself up and just telling her. I was reassuring her. Here I am, the newbie. And I'm like, hey, it's okay. It's just stage fright. I'll get there at some point. And but it was, I got a sense that for her, it was a badge of honor that there was something wrong with her because she could not make me come. And I was like, oh.
So she needed to validate herself through your body performing an outer appearance of pleasure. So she missed out on opportunity to connect with you and actually have a satisfying exchange.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's performance.
Yeah, it sure was. I had a few relationships like that.
It's a social norm. It's a sociocultural norm to do this. So it's like teaching about pleasure-based sex is asking people to completely forget everything that they think about sex right now. Because one of the things about pleasure-based is that the orgasm is not central or required. It's simply a bonus. It may happen. Right. It may not. Because an orgasm doesn't even tell you whether pleasure happened or not. Mm-hmm. You can have a meh orgasm. You can have forced orgasms. An orgasm can be non-consensual, can be painful, can make someone feel bad and negative things. Those can happen. Wow. So an orgasm does not equal pleasure. Pleasure is perceived by the person in the body receiving the sensation. Only they can say it feels good.
For me, pleasure starts with even just a look first thing in the morning when it builds all day long or whatever. Right. But it's not just one particular act, you know, it's well, let's see what I lost my train of thought as we were talking about pleasure.
Somehow my brain cells and my memory evaporate whenever I start talking about the subject of pleasure. Anyway, you'll have to tune in next week to see where that conversation goes and what else Whitney has to teach us about sex and pleasure in part two. In the meantime, here are some announcements. If you get value from listening to my weekly podcast, I invite you to please show your appreciation by buying me a virtual coffee. All you have to do is go to the website buymeacoffee.com/Robin Douglas, RobinDouglass. I'd like to thank you all who have recently bought me a coffee or coffees, as well as all of you who have purchased coffees for me in the past. I really appreciate your support, and it does make a difference and means the world to Hugo and me. So thank you. Did you know I offer private one-on-one coaching? If you are struggling to make sense of and manage your coming out late journey, then I encourage you to send me an email and request information about my one-on-one coaching services. It really does make a big difference to have someone like myself who really understands what you're going through. Just email me at comingoutlater@gmail.com to request my coaching information sheet. Retreats. As far as the Coming Out Late retreats go, the retreat schedule for 2024 is shaping up nicely. The purpose of my Coming Out Late retreats is really to build community, make connections, and experience this newish out gay life with a small, trusted group of queer women, all while having a ton of fun in the process. We are kicking off our Coming Out Late retreats with a trip out to Portland, Oregon. Yay! We've been getting a huge amount of requests from people to come out to the Pacific Northwest. So here we come. And that's going to be in August. Then we travel back up to Up North Pride Festivities, which is taking place in Traverse City, Michigan, from September 25th to September 29th. And from there, we move on to Women's Week in Provincetown, Massachusetts, October 16th through the 20th. And if you want to be put on the list for any of these Coming Out Late retreat locations, email me at comingoutlater podcast@gmail.com, and you'll be put on the group email list. That's all I have for you for now. But in the meantime, be good. And if you can't be good, then at least be good at it. And remember, it's better late than never, because it's never too late. Carpe vita, everyone. Seize life. If you're looking for your people, your community, and a safe place to learn and get answers to your questions, then come join the conversation. Come join us in our private Facebook group, Coming Out Late, because we all know it's better late than never, and it's never too late.